Delaware Senator Joe Biden says he grew up with a problem.
I used to stutter pretty badly as a young kid. And when I was with people, I didn't know what to talk like that. And were it not for the fact I was a pretty good athlete, the guys who made fun of me, I could kick the hell out of them on the field. I'm not joking.
Joe Biden improved enough to become one of the more outspoken senators and to become a Democratic presidential candidate. He's running for the second time. But when he tells his story in a new book called Promises to Keep, Senator Biden begins with his fight against that stutter.
I used to stand in front of the mirror in my bedroom. I shared a bedroom, like a lot of people in my era, in my neighborhood, with my two brothers and an uncle. And I'd stand there in front of the mirror over the dresser, and I would practice. Meek young men grow up in libraries, believing it their duty to accept the views of Cicero, Bacon, and blah, blah. Because the most embarrassing part of my stutter was it contorted your face. You know, you don't go up and ask the girl out, hey, would you go to the prom with me? And it's a killer.
When you started going through your life story, were there parts of that story that you found difficult to explain or to talk about in public, as it were?
Difficult not to explain, but difficult to write about. Things that, you know, I wish I had been more mature. I wish I had handled the immediate aftermath of the accident involving my family better.
Let me explain for those who don't know the story that your wife and daughter were killed in a car accident very shortly after you'd been elected to the United States Senate in 1972.
That's correct.
And you write about the months after that accident when you came to the United States Senate at the urging of your colleagues, but largely drifted through your job and had a great trouble focusing on
it. I did. I had a great deal of trouble focusing. I had three children, and the two that survived, the boys, were very badly injured. I did my job. I didn't miss the votes. I showed up, but I just could hardly wait to get home.
What's to regret about all that? It seems perfectly normal.
Well, not so much that piece, but I was angry. I was kind of looking for a fight. I didn't want to talk to you guys in the press because initially, understandably, all they wanted to talk to me about was, you know, what does it feel like, you know? Mm-hmm. What are the injuries? Did you see the car? You know what I mean? All the stuff that I found gruesome. And I was probably hostile to the press. I wish I had been more mature in handling what happened.
I was fascinated by the detail that you write that you had difficulty sleeping except when you were on a plane going somewhere.
Yeah, it was like suspended. I mean, have you ever gone, you know, you go off on a trip in a plane and the fact that you have nagging problems at home, you forget them, you just move on. I ended up going into roughly 50 congressional races at the request of the campaign, and looking back on it, it's totally understandable why the press immediately thought, God, this guy's really ambitious. Here he is collecting chits.
Well, we should mention that's why people go around often and campaign for
the
people.
I'm sorry, yes. So that, well, I'm doing that now as a president. I'm going around.
Yeah.
It was the way that I could temporarily sort of suspend the grief.
You did end up at a fairly young age, in your mid-40s, running for president for the first time.
Yes.
And being forced to withdraw from that race because of news stories about quoting someone without attribution in a speech, because of quoting someone without proper footnoting in a paper when you were in law school. I wonder if, regardless of whether you think that you were innocent or guilty as charged, whether you think it's appropriate that people look into the biographical incidents and search out the character of presidential candidates
totally
as opposed to the positions.
Totally appropriate.
It was appropriate for people to look into
it. Appropriate to look into it, but I wish they had looked into it. They didn't look into it. And had they looked into it, they may have reached, and some did ultimately, a more balanced conclusion. But the bottom line was, I made a mistake. I did not, in the debate in Iowa, attribute what I said. And it was born out of my arrogance. I did not prepare for the debate. I mean, it was stupid. I didn't deserve to be president. I didn't deserve to be president just based on the Richter scale of was I tough enough and did I understand the process.
Wait a minute. Are you saying the system worked?
The system worked.
In shoving you
the
out of it before
worked.
You even got to the election year.
In a strange way, it did work.
Has it been hard to wait 20 years for another shot at the White House?
No. Matter of fact, I didn't make a political speech outside of my state for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I just focused almost exclusively on my initiatives for national crime legislation, foreign policy issues.
You weren't waiting for another chance?
No. And what I finally decided this time was, and I had no intention of running, I worked very hard for John Kerry.
In 2004.
And after John lost, which was a real kick in the head, I realized if I really meant and cared about as deeply as I do the issues I care about, I wasn't going to be able to affect them very much in the Senate.
Well, let me mention one way that you have been on the national stage. You became the ranking Democrat on the Foreign Affairs Committee in the Senate, working closely with Richard Lugar, very respected Republican colleague. Do you think it was significant that in 2003 you chose to vote in favor of authorizing the president to use force in Iraq?
Significant in what sense?
In the sense that perhaps if you'd spoken a different way or voted a different way, it might have had some small effect on the outcome.
Well, Senator Lugar and I did speak a different way for 5 months. There's a lot of revisionist history that goes on these days about Iraq. But remember what the context was. The context was, do we lift the embargo or do we pressure the international community to tighten the embargo on Saddam Hussein? So this was designed to avoid war.
I know that people say now that their votes were about an effort to strengthen the president so he would not have to go to war. I know that statements were made to that effect in Congress at the time. And yet, just as a journalist who was in Washington, it seemed to be widely understood that this was a vote about going to war.
Well, why didn't you write that? I love you guys. How you hardly ever get it right, and you talk about it. Look at what the majority of the press was saying. The majority of the press wasn't saying, don't give the president this authority. Remember what happened after we went into Afghanistan.
I'm not sure that as a journalist, someone like me would be expressing an opinion about what was right or wrong.
The editorial pages were expressing an opinion.
I'm just telling you how it felt at the time as someone here covering the story.
But what was the editorial board of the New York Times writing? What was the editorial board of the LA Times writing? So this idea that everybody knew he was going to be irresponsible is revisionist history.
Last question, Senator. You said that 20 years ago you didn't deserve to be president. Do you now?
Yes, I'm the single most qualified person in either party on the problems that most urgently face America. When this president constitutionally is required to hand off power to the next president,
take a sip of water.
He will leave the next president with virtually no margin for error. This is no place for on-the-job learning.
The book is called Promises to Keep. The author is Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware, a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president. Senator, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. I enjoy it.
And you can read an excerpt from Senator Biden's book at npr.org.